Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
And now, join Kevin Hart as he dives into the minds of some of your favorite celebrities. This is Gold Mines with Kevin Hart.
Welcome, world. You already know what it is. It's another episode of Gold Mines. And what do we do on Gold Mines? God damn it. We get inside the minds of amazing personnel. Once was comedians, but we had to broaden it. Comedians was too small. Why? Well, because there's so many more amazing minds out there. Minds of funny personnel, funny and amazing brains. Entrepreneurs, writers. I mean, goodness gracious. Storytellers, directors. You name it. I can go down a list of what people do. We felt the need to expose and expand. So that's what we're now doing. Today's mind, well, guess what? It follows suit, ladies and gentlemen. This is someone that I have tried to talk to for so long, but through the trials and tribulations of different website and online connections, we've been met with various roadblocks. But finally, this conversation can happen. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Punky Johnson to the show today. Punky.
Yes, what's happening? Hey. Finally, Cav. Finally.
Finally, right?
Yes.
Finally. Just a little background on Punky, man. You know, there's so much that we can say and can't say due to the climate of today. You know, we're dealing with a strike, and that strike puts certain loopholes on our conversation. But an amazing background you come from, you know, a writer, an amazing voice, an amazing talent, an amazing personality you have been for so long.
Yeah.
And it's so dope to talk to you because what I love to do is highlight the stories, right? I love to really tap into the trajectory, tap into the world of why, how, right? Yeah, where did this start? How did it start? These are the things that I feel the people that are deemed to be my listeners really want to understand and know. So, Punky, first and foremost, where are you from?
New Orleans, Louisiana. Big up, Sherman, down south. Southernality out here.
Southernality. I've heard that before.
That's right.
Southernality. It's like a twist on personality, correct?
It's a twist on personality because, you know, we all speak to each other out there. Mm-hmm. You know, you go to a lot of places, ain't nobody speaking. A lot of people don't hold open doors. We speak to everybody. Mm-hmm. How you doing, my baby? What's going on, my baby?
Ah, very, very comfortable and loving in the South, right? And I think that's one thing that I've always taken away from the South. Every place can have the feeling of home if you allow it to. Right. You know,
Absolutely. Everybody
wants to speak to your point. People don't mind having a conversation in public. You know, the idea of being a stranger is something that's frowned upon in the South. People want to say they know.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody wants to know who and know how. I can agree to that.
It's fun down here.
All right. So Southernality you have. I want to say, of course, we all don't just do what we do. You don't get into the world of entertainment just because it's the first thing. It's something that we tend to fall into or discover. For you, what is it that acted as your throughway, right? Like, what was the gateway to you to get to the world of business, of course, that you now are in? How did it happen? How did you fall into it?
Well, I'm going to start with my mother. She wanted to move to Hollywood and be an actress. She told me all my life, I wanted to go to Hollywood. I wanted to do this. I wanted to act. I wanted to sing. I wanted to dance. But I chose to stay in these streets. And I don't want you to be like me. So she's always been like very, very dramatic in everything that she does. Even when punishing me, she's dramatic. You know how every weekend the family clean up and they listen to music? My mama didn't listen to music. She listened to Eddie Murphy and Richard Pryor.
So you grew up in a comedy household.
Yes.
From the gate, was that always like the... I guess you could say the pick of choice for not just your mom, but other people. Did you guys always respond to comedy more than music, more than anything?
Always, always. The whole family. The whole family is stupid.
Yeah.
Everybody dumb in this family. Nobody take nothing serious. We the type of family, as soon as you start getting serious and sentimental, we be like, go ahead on with that bullshit. Just shut up and shut up for our bill flow. Ain't nobody got time to be serious. We don't know. The only time we get serious is when somebody, if somebody died. And even at the funeral, we still acting a fool.
Were you the funniest? Like, do you feel like out the gate? Or were you the chosen one of funny? Have you always been the funniest person in your household? Or was it a discovery that came later? Like, were there other people in front of you that were,
absolutely.
Oh, no, don't, aunt such and such, or uncle such and such. That's where the comedy came from. Who did you lean on more for the laughs?
Look, I'm going to tell you this. My family funny and don't even know they funny. Like, we go back and watch a lot of home videos. And my grandmother was probably the funniest of everybody, just the way she used to go off on people. My uncle was super, super funny and talented. I mean, I don't think they would have got on stage and did no stand-up comedy. But as far as their aura and what they put out into the world, it was just stupid. So I would say it was my grandmother, my uncle, and my mother. See, my mother made me want to get into the show business. My grandmother, my uncle was hilarious. And then I just followed suit. From listening to Richard Pryor and watching everything she would watch, of course, that trickles down to me. So I started watching all of it. And I started really getting into it since I was younger. The last thing I would watch when I would go to sleep before bed is Comic View at night.
Oh, wow.
When I would see like Montana and DC Curry, Cedric the Entertainer, all them guys.
It's so crazy when you think about just the world of Comic View, you think about Def Jam, you think about all the names attached to it. You know, these are not only household names. These are names that acted as the reason for people's entry into comedy, right? And it wasn't always about the biggest star. It was about the people that you related to that you got to see in a consistent way. That's what BET Comic View was for me. Like you said, that nighttime television was key in our households. And, you know, it wasn't like you could watch a bunch of stuff. The things that we related to always had a high level of laugh attached to it. And BET was that.
Yes.
Here's my question. Before making the step to comedy, was there another job? Was there something else you were doing? Did you have to leave something else to start doing comedy?
So I don't ever think I was made to be in like the, I don't want to call it the regular world, but the 9-to-5 world, because I got a mouthpiece and I'm not really good at controlling it all the time. I'm not made to be in the corporate world.
Corporate world. The corporate world.
Yes.
So you were in the corporate world at a certain point in time.
Right. And it wasn't even like wearing a suit corporate world. I was working at a bar. But the bar still had rules, you know, and I had to follow these rules. And people come talk to you all crazy, and then I get fired for defending myself verbally. I mean, but a dude came through a chair at me one time. I was like, what you talking about? And I caught the chair, and then like, but the people at the bar loved me, so they all got up and chased him down the street. It was a whole bunch of stuff. But what really made me leave to go follow my dream was I was going through stuff with an ex. And I was just like, this, it ain't worth it. Let me just go follow my dreams. You know what I'm saying? I'm not about to sit up here and do this with you when I could be doing much bigger, better things.
The ex inadvertently pushed you to a place where you felt that you should do the thing that you were destined to do.
Yeah.
So ultimately, that ex brought value to you. That's value.
That's what I'm saying. Like, first of all, I was young. We were together for like 8 years. And she was like, this it? And I was like, what you mean? She's like, I got to go out there and play. And that, I didn't know how to be hurt. That was my first time being hurt. So I didn't know how to experience that pain. So I was just doing stuff. I was just following her. I'm just like, oh, no, no. After like a couple months of that, I was like, I got to go. I got to get out of here.
Oh, you went crazy.
Oh, no,
you're saying that you had a crazy period.
Yeah.
Yeah. You had a crazy period for a minute.
Right. Just doing stuff, climbing trees and smoking weed, chilling, eating chips and sandwiches on limbs. I had lost my mind. Because I didn't know how to handle that hurt. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And we wasn't the generation to be like, oh, I'm going to go get help and go to therapy. We wasn't there at that time. So I just went crazy. And then I got up, left.
Well, there's good things that come from crazy. First things first is acknowledging it. If you're a person that loses it and refuses to see that you lost it, then that means that you're on the other side. You can't lose it and not realize that you lost it. You got to be able to say, oh, no, I'm not mentally where I'm supposed to be. And I need to get back to a place where I find my foundation.
That's right.
That's good. It's when you ignore it and are okay walking without a foundation. That's when it gets bad.
Nah.
So your foundation, of course, presented itself because you started to follow your dream.
Right.
So now we get into a space of you following your dream. Oh, my God. What is the thing that happened that acted as the light bulb of, okay, this is it. I'm in the right place. I'm doing the right thing. For you, what was that light bulb moment?
All right. Well, first of all, I knew I wanted to do comedy, but I was too scared to do it. I'm like, I'm not doing it. I lied my whole life. I lied. I'm not doing it. So when I moved to Los Angeles, I went to acting school. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to just get in through acting school. I'm not doing comedy. I'm a punk. I'm a pussy. I'm too scared. So then I needed a job. So I went on this website. I mean, it's this dope ass website called Craigslist. And they listed a whole bunch of places that was hiring. And I saw the comedy store was hiring for cocktail waitresses. Now, I thought it was a comic book store, but I'm dumb as hell because why would they need cocktail waitresses? I'm just dumb. My brain didn't wire the two together. So then, now in New Orleans, when we get ready for an interview, we get ready for an interview. We need that job.
Okay.
I'm going, okay. I'm casket sharp. I got a suit on. I got this smooth pink pinstripe button down with a vest, black pants. I got a briefcase with my headshot in there and my resume on the other side. I'm casket sharp. Bury me today. I'm ready, right? So I go there and I didn't know LA ran interviews like this. It's like 75 people up in there. 75. I'm just like, Jesus, how am I going to get this job? Now, when I get inside, that's when my mind is blown. Because if you ever go to the comedy store, you see everybody that's highlighted. You got Robin Williams highlighted, David Letterman, just all the greats are just highlighted. And neon lights in the original room, right? And then you got all these names on the wall outside. I'm like, what is this place? So I go in, I have this interview. I'm like, there ain't no way I'm gonna get this job with 75 people. So then I make a promise to myself, yo, if you get this job, you can't be no bitch. If you get this job, it's meant for you to do comedy. Promise yourself and God and the universe right now, if you get this job, you're gonna stop being a punk. And you're gonna do comedy.
Wow.
Out of 75 people, I get the job. That's where it started right there.
Wow.
So
I mean, that's the light, right? That's your light bulb moment.
Yes.
You can't ignore the light bulb moment. And what I mean by that for our listeners is, you know, everybody plays this game with themselves where whether you're asking God, whether you're talking to yourself, everybody has this game where they say, I promise you, if this happens, I feel like I'm gonna be able to do the thing that I want to do. All I ask is that this thing go through. And you're speaking that out into the world. You're trying your best to speak it into existence. And when that existence presents itself, well, you can't back away from it.
No.
You can't ultimately lie to yourself. You got to haul ass and go forward with the thought that you basically put into the air. This is what you asked for.
Yeah.
So now that you get this moment, right, it happens. Oh my God. Well, I got to go do it. I got to go do comedy. I'm going to stop being a bitch, as you said. I'm going to go make it do what it do. For you, was it an easy transition or was it one that was a little difficult? What did you feel about your legs getting like up under you in those beginning stages?
Well, see, I kind of messed myself over because in my mind, I'm like, look, I'm going to go get this job. I'm going to not say I want to do comedy. The first thing I'm going to do is watch it, see how they politic, you know, listen to it, get a rhythm of it, try to understand the game. And then after that, in about 6 months, I'm going to tell people I want to do comedy. But that came back and bit me in the ass.
Okay.
Because comedians are crazy.
Okay, how?
They're crazy. Yeah. You're not about to get in this game and think you're about to take it for granted and think you're about to play with this craft. You ain't about to do that. Mm-hmm. And they showed me.
No.
Because I came out the blue, hey, I want to do comedy. Like, no, you just want to do it because you see it. You ain't come up in here saying you want to do comedy. Now, all of a sudden, since you're around and you want to do comedy. So now, and I put my foot in my mouth, now I got to work harder to get on stage. Now I got to work harder to prove to them that it was a plan all along. I just came in a different way, thought I could maneuver it differently.
And which circuit were you in? Were you still in the place of New Orleans? Were you in New York? Where were you at this time?
At this time, I'm in California. I got the job now.
You're in California. Okay. So you're in California now. You're doing a California circuit, which is a circuit. Like the California comedy circuit is not no bitch. And you got real comics that are working really hard on a weekly basis, not only just for stage time, but for an opportunity, right? Like everybody wants to be seen. Mm-hmm. So everybody's trying their best to be their best at all times. So I can understand where that pressure comes in.
Oh yeah.
Were you 7 days a week at this point? How many days were you trying to devote to the stage?
Oh my God. I think I went down to 6 days a week after being into it for like 6 years. It was seven days a week. I'm at the coffee shops. I'm at the hole in the wall bars where you got to pay $5. I got to pay to work. I'm at these trash ass art exhibits in quotations. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it was horrible. It was horrible. And I'll still go back to this day. I don't care if they got coffee shop open mics out there. I'll still go.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, look, I've said it before. I feel like it's a fraternity, right? And it's a frat that once you're in and you understand, you never want to leave or get out of, because you not only respect the craft, you respect the work that has to go into the craft. So, you know, regardless of any amount of success that has presented itself for whomever, like, it's important to understand how the success comes. And it comes with a high volume of work, right?
Yes.
A high volume of effort. But I like the synergy that the comics kind of have when they band together and when they support one another. I mean, of course, you know, you got your moments of frustration where some may not get along here and there. Ultimately, it's something that is a band of brothers and sisters where everybody is like aligned with, hey, we want the best for each other, because when those doors open, they allow us all to go through them, and we can all make moves that allow more moves to be made for others.
Absolutely.
And I think that's the beauty. That's the beauty of the fraternity. What I'll say is there comes a turn in comedy where comedy starts to open up these other doors, and these doors get open fast, right? Where you start to realize, well, damn, I don't just have to be a comic. Right? I can get into acting, yeah. I can get into writing, directing, producing, whatever. Was there a moment of realization for you that presented itself of either realizing what other people were doing that made you see what else you could do? Or was that just something that kind of like started to sink in? How did you get to see the broad scope of opportunity that comedy could present?
Well, honestly, you know, I've always had this dream of doing comedy. Like I told you, I was scared to death. But then when I got into comedy, it was just so much against being Black, being a woman, being gay. And then I was a waitress, and they didn't want waitresses doing comedy. So the obstacles and the adversity was so hard. I started putting myself in a box. Like, this is it. This all, you know, I'm never going to grow, blah, blah, blah. But then I got passed at the Comedy Store, got my name on the wall. And when that happened, this guy, Ahmed Weinberg, asked me to do something for Sarah Silverman's company called Please Understand Me. And it was this sketch show that went crazy. Like, everybody was just went nuts. It was like this therapy all show where I played this crazy wife, this crazy masculine wife, to this like straight feminine. He was such a sensitive guy. And I was just all like, ah, okay. And all kind of management companies saw it. And everybody started hitting me up. So I started doing all these interviews with these people, not interviews, I guess meetings or whatever.
Meetings, generals.
Yeah, general meetings. And Ahmed was with 3 Arts, and he pulled me to the side. He was like, when you're with 3 Arts, you're family. So I was like, okay. And then I go talk to them over there. And of course, I meet Ethan and Dave, and they did something different that nobody else did. Like, everybody was like showing me a timeline of my career and all of that. And Dave was just sitting up there like, let me tell you something, kid, we're the best. And that was it. That's pretty much all he said.
That's it.
He was like, I ain't got to explain nothing to you. You either with us or not. And that's the type of attitude I love. I'm like, yep, I'm going with them. I'm going with them.
And by the way, he's not blowing smoke up yet.
No. It's
like, they really are when it comes to handling talent, operating with talent. Like, they've always been at the highest peak of a mountain, in my opinion. And it's not because of the work and opportunities that they can present. It's just because of the understanding of relationships, right? Understanding of how to deal with the people that you are saying that you want to work with. And that's the talent within the talent.
The talent
within the talent is dealing with the people that believe in you to bring the opportunities of tomorrow to the table.
Yeah.
When you have that rapport, it's a completely different understanding. And honestly, I think that the roadmap to real success, it's so broad. The roads can go in so many different ways because you believe that this person has your best interest. And you also know that in return, you have a high level of respect that warrants the feeling for their best interest. So it's a give and take.
Oh, yeah.
This is Goldmines, hosted by Kevin Hart.
Hi, it's Stephen Colbert, and I'm here to tell you about The Late Show Pod Show, which is the podcast of The Late Show with me, Stephen Colbert, and I'm here with my producer of the podcast, Becca. Hi, Becca.
Hi, Stephen.
So what do people get when they listen to The Late Show Pod Show? Let's sell this thing.
The extended moments, for sure, because we run out of time for broadcast, but we have plenty of time on the podcast.
It's kind of like being a live audience member of the show, because you get things that no one else hears. Listen to The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert wherever you get your podcasts.
Want to make mom's day?
Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
Hey, listen. Remember how you told me to toss those takeout containers before we left for vacation? And you were like, I'm serious. If that leaks over the counter, it'll be a slimy abomination by the time I get back. And I was like, yeah. Of course. Don't worry about it. I won't forget. Well...
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed. Rinse after use if in contact with food surface.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Now back to Gold Mines with host Kevin Hart.
Who are some of your like inspirations, right? When you just said being a female, being gay, being black, there's so many things that you felt were obstacles. Being a waitress, and at that point, like, you know, them not wanting the waiters to double down and work as comics. There's so many things that were roadblocks for you. You're pulling inspiration from a various different, you know, group of people, personnel, whether it's family, friends,
yep,
or other artists. Who acted as inspirations for you?
I mean, so many people. I ain't gonna lie. Like, just even growing up, just watching Monique Samore. I don't even know if she do comedy no more, but Montana, if you out there, Montana, you inspired me so much to get out there and do comedy.
Wow.
Cat Williams. Mm-hmm. That's my guy right there. And you, I watch you. Like, I was talking to these people the other day. It was like, how do you put your comedy together? You know what I'm saying? I don't like to watch too much comedy, because then I start sounding like the person. But like, I'm starting to do my first special right now.
Wow.
And I got a hole in it. I'm like, there's a hole in it somewhere and I got to fix it. So I started watching the people that don't have no holes in it. Like, it's very well put together. It's very strategic. You know, it's all the callbacks are there. It all makes sense. The setups are there. The story is there. The education part is there. The information, like, everything is just there. So you and Cat Williams do that the most for me. You know what I'm saying? Especially when you want to teach somebody, but you teach them with a smile on your face. Because I started watching myself and I'm like, when I'm in these teachable moments, I get so serious. The crowd get kind of tense. And when you in these teachable moments, you be like, I had to learn a lesson. Like, you do it, you do it with such a smile on your face, with such good energy, that I'm just like, okay, that's one thing I'm doing. When I hit the teachable moments, my face get teachable and I get preachy. I'm just like, nah, I got to cut that out. And then you always have these great closeouts to your jokes. So it's not like it's a cliffhanger where it's like, oh, I know something else could have been added to that joke. You close it out really, really well. So I'm like, these are the things that I'm missing. So now I'm going back into my hour. And I'm making sure I got fun, teachable moments that put out good, positive energy. And I make sure I got a closeout to it. And I'm pulling out these callbacks. Now I got like 10 callbacks. You know what I'm saying?
You're talking about working on your hour, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people don't understand an hour of stand-up comedy is a long time.
Yeah.
An hour of jokes that are going back to back to back is a long time. Fucking time.
Yeah.
Like, right now we're talking, we're having a general conversation, and that conversation, it will take an hour, right? This is an hour of real authentic dialogue. This dialogue isn't filled with back-to-back jokes. Doing something that has the goal or task of providing laughter consistently for 60 minutes is tough, and that hour has to be reworked. What you're talking about is so dope, because, you know, I want my listeners to understand, like, you have to rework that again, work it again, then rework it, then go back, rework it again, because you want it to be as tight as possible. So it's a never ending process. And even when you feel like, oh, this is it, I got it, it's the tightest thing, you're still going to have your days after set where you go, ooh, I just thought of something else. Ooh, I got another little piece. And you're tweaking it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the comics that you named, they're all great from giving the audience a POV of their life or experience and doing it in such a relatable manner to where the audience walks away knowing more about the comic and laughing at the idea that they do some of the same things that we do.
Oh, yeah.
You're not separating yourself from your audience. You're opening up yourself for your audience to go, me too. Oh my God, I can't believe you did that. Holy shit. I hope that never happens to me. But it should always be something that people can have a yin and yang effect with. And that's what it seems like you're talking about. Yeah. Even in the things that you're trying to fix. And when you call them holes, I wouldn't even say that they're holes. They're just places where you feel like they can be better and get better. Not holes. You don't have holes because, once again, you're talented at what you do.
Yeah.
So it's not a hole. It's just something where you're like, oh, I'm going to make this part better.
Yeah.
I want this part to be enhanced a little more.
Yeah.
How far do you feel you are away from finding out? Like, do you feel like you're in the jello right now?
Man,
where
look,
you're in like...
I'm grooving okay. right now because I've been working on it for a while. Of course, you know, I can't be consistent with it because of my job. So that holds me back. So all I really, really have is the summer. So I had like 2.5 months to do it last year. And this year I'm in it because, you know, we're on strike. So like they hooked me up with like 50 something shows this summer. So I'm excited about it. After like last summer and this summer, I finally got the group. Like, I know how it's going to flow now. I know everything is going to be. I'm just like, I was just on stage and I said one word, traditional. I'm like, in my mind, I didn't stop while I was on set, but I was just like, wait, that's it. That's what it's going to be called. I was even struggling to come up with a title. You know what I'm saying? Because this is going to be so special to me because it's going to be my coming out party as a comedian. You know what I'm saying? And I got divorced, so all my divorce stuff going to be in there. And I want people to know I'm not just gay. Like, I got a whole bunch of marriage material where I got everybody back because I play both sides.
By the way, first of all, that may be the funniest shit that I've ever heard. You just said, I just want everybody to know I'm not just gay. Like that right there may be the funniest thing that I've ever heard. Like, first of all, there's levels to me. Okay, I don't want you to think it's just the gay shit with me. I got other stuff.
I got like other stuff.
That's the special part about being a comic. Like, you know, you got a story to tell. Like, as comics, there's so much depth to our lives, to what we've been through. There's hurt, there's pain, there's failure, there's wins, minimal wins, big wins that then are hit with law. Like,
yes.
A comic's life is funny only to the comic. To other people, they go, oh my God.
Yeah.
What? You've done what? You've been through what? But to us, we have an amazing way of looking at our lives through a different lens and to attach the laughter to it. I love that. And I love how excited you are. Like, you said something that's so key. You said, this is special to me.
Yeah.
My special is special to me. And that right there, that's the biggest part.
Yeah.
Like, you gotta find the love or have the attachment to the craft. You gotta love it more than anybody else possibly can. And it sounds like you do. It sounds like you do have that level of attachment and love.
I get, you know, discouraged sometimes. Sometimes I'm like, oh, like when I can't, I'm just like, oh, there's something to it. I can't get it. Sometimes it's either make me mad when I get frustrated, or sometimes I'm like, oh, okay, joke. You want to play with me? Watch how I handle your ass next time. So I do that with everything. I do that with food. I'm like, I'm not going to eat you today, chicken, because sometimes I like too much fried chicken. I do that with everything that either discourages me or pushes me to do better. It's a fine
line. I think that that's any battle with self, right?
Yeah.
Like, ultimately, that's just the battle. You know, I used to perform, and I don't know if I say used to because now I stopped, I shut down, the tour ended. But in me going and like really developing a set or working on jokes, like, there were moments where I would hit a stage 5-6 times in one night, and I would put up a week. I would put up about 40 to 50 shows in a week. Like, in the grind period of me really trying to figure out the jokes, trying to figure out the set, I go to New York and I'll take a nice, you know, 2 months and I'll beat the fuck out of a set.
Yeah.
Just to walk away with some type of blueprint or foundation that I was comfortable with. But to your point, you know, taking those battles or having those moments where you feel like you can't get over the hump, the best way is just to stay on the hill of like, the hump. And eventually it'll crack because you're not going to be comfortable with the uncomfortable. So eventually you're going to crack it because of your frustration.
Well, that'd be the breakthrough, right? It's like you go through all of this stuff and sometimes I'll look back, I'll be like, I was sitting up there getting frustrated, but it was all worth it. It all be key to getting to where I need to be. Like there's just this one bit, you know, I'm just trying to get better at my storytelling. It's just this one bit that I want to talk about. It's so important to my set. It's about my wedding day because it was horrible. And once I get that, this it's going to take it to the next level. I'm just so excited to be working on it. But it's pissing me off because I can't get it now, but I will. And it's going to be so good. It's going to be delicious.
I think that your level and want right now for success in this particular field is dope. It's genuine. And there's like a fresh feeling to that first special. There's a fresh feeling to, as you said, your coming out party as a comic. Here's a question that I have for you, right? Everybody does a special and then, you know, the special happens and then it's over. What do you want from your special? What's the takeaway? What do you want the special to set you up to do next? In a perfect world, if you could say, I dropped my special and then from my special, I'm able to do this. In a perfect world, give me the punky blueprint. It goes special, and then what do you think happens next for you?
All right, this might be a big jump, all right?
There's no big jump. I can't let you say that. I cannot let you say that. There's no such thing as a big jump. Like, this is your blueprint. This is how you see it. So don't be fucked up, like, when it happens. Don't say that, because you're going to be fucked up when it happens. Well, so give me the perfect plan. I want to hear it.
Well, number one, first of all, I want to be recognized as somebody that's well-respected on stage, because I'm not about to just be throwing out no bull. I'm not about to be like, you know what, let me just put some shit together. They tell me I can do a special, I'm going to do it. I'm not doing that. I'm not saying people do that. I'm just telling you, I'm very serious. I want people to see the intellectual part about it. I want people to see, yeah, she's been working. So that's number one.
I'm with you.
Number two, I want to do action movies. I want to go straight into it. I've been boxing. Okay. I've been running. I do 150 push-ups a day. I just want to, you know, run and be like, freeze, motherfucker. Like, I just want to do it.
Okay.
I want to go straight to action movies. Action movies? I'm like, yeah, no problem. Okay. I'm like, action movies.
Can I just say something to you? I know you think that sounds like far-fetched. Granted, the presentation of it, of going, from here, I'm going to action. Okay, that can sound nuts. I get it. I get where that can sound nuts. But at the same time, it can't. Because if you're just like, look, you know, I want this to set me up for acting. But in acting, I think where I flourish the most is in action. Because I've been working on set thing. I get it. I would say just work on the presentation of the transition, right? It's like acting. And I think the acting things that I'm looking to do are more action and fluid. All right, I'll follow you. But when you go action movie, like the way you just said, you jumped out. I get it. But by the way, you'll be surprised at how many opportunities will present themselves. Like when you talk about action and you're attaching, you know, like female actresses, actors, whatever, to these roles, the stunt game.
Yeah.
Listen to me. The stunt game is a real game. Like, I've been on sets and scenes where I've watched these women really work in these action scenes. Mm-hmm. And you walk away blown away by the physical punishment of getting thrown, throwing, going to walls, downstairs. Like, stunt people really, like, they go at it. Yeah. And if you're action to the point, you know, I've been dabbling in this action shit. We all get the little taste of, I'm going to do this for myself. I got it. No, take this one off. You get a little taste where you start to believe this shit. No, y'all step down. I got this one.
No.
Kevin, are you sure? Yeah, everybody step back. And you get one of them hits and you go, you know what? Let me sit my stupid ass down. I done hit my fucking head on this wall. I don't want to say nothing to nobody. I don't want nobody to know it, punky, but I think I'm bleeding. I think I saw a trickle of blood. come out the back of my head. Now, I don't want to shut. I don't want to shut this production down, but I think there's a chance that we need a week off because I done fucked up. I'll tell you a funny story, right? It's an Ice Cube story. So we're doing Ride Along, and this is a stunt, you know, where I'm fighting Lawrence Fishburne, and Cube is like, he's fighting the handlers, right?
Right.
And in this scene, the guy throws a punch, Cube ducks it, and like hits him with a cross. Like, I mean, a real cross. So the stunt guy kept saying, you know, Cube, come across his nose, because for the camera angle, come down, right? So you're punching straight. It's not reading like a punch. So you gotta come across. So Cube's like, all right, okay, bet. So we do it again, and like, still not reading, Cube. You gotta go higher. You gotta come across. So the stunt guy goes, look, man, you're good. Just come across. Like, I'll feel it, and I'll be able to go.
Uh-oh.
Cube. He went. Damn near knocked this motherfucker out. When I tell you this punch had no business being thrown. Listen, this punch was nothing like the stuntman's plan, right? The stuntman said, go across. Cube's punch was a direct punch. You hear the stunt guy go, oh God, oh God, right? Grabs his nose start bleeding. Cut! Stop! Oh shit! Cube, grab him, give him a hug. My bad, man. Stunt guy goes, no, it's okay. It's all right. It's okay, man. This stuff happens. I'm in the background. You know, this is early on in my career, so I've been in a couple of movies. The stunt guy goes, this stuff happens. I said, no, it don't. It ain't supposed to. That ain't supposed to happen. That ain't supposed to happen at all. Cube, like, shut the fuck up, Kev. I'm like, I'm just saying, man. You got to get that man something. We got to get him a gift. Listen, stunt guy, he went, took a second, came right back and finished the scene.
Wow.
Took the punch like a champ, finished the scene. Cube kept throwing the same type of punches. He kept acting as if it was a correct punch. Never bitched up. I tell that story to say,
Lord.
Do you want to do action? You got to give some respect and props to the people that do it and have done it at a high level, because they're fucking dedicated.
Ooh.
They're dedicated to the hits and falls. So, Punky, I say that to say, you better put your ass in a position where you ready to do that physical shit all day. Like,
it's all day.
All day.
Man, I was.
It's a different animal.
I'm watching it, you know, especially like these military movies. I'm like, how much do they have to run on set?
God, man.
You out there in the desert. God. It's hot.
I've been there.
It's dusty.
Jumanji, with me with that big ass fucking backpack. Let me tell you something. I wanted to throw that backpack off the fucking cliff when we doing them scenes. All right, take off. Y'all gotta run. Go. And I'm running. All you hear is this. My fucking big ass bag, the boots. Oh, you hate it. You hate it after a while. So just understand, when you get it, I want to talk to you after. I want to talk to you after a hit, and I want to say, how was it, man? I saw you shoot that movie. It looked like it was a lot of action. How was it? And you go, hey, listen to me. It was a fucking workout. It was a gym every day.
That's why I stay boxing. I stay in the gym because I already see it. I'm just like, when I wake up, I'll be like, I don't feel like it. I'll be like, action movies. I'll be like, come on, you got to get up. Let's go.
Are you sparring
no,
in the gym?
Not yet. But I know it's a different monster. I know it is.
Hey,
I know it's different because my trainer, sometimes I'll slip and not keep my fist up. He'll just give me a slight tap. Bow. Slight tap. And I shake back like, God damn. He like, imagine if that was a real punch. Keep your fucking hands up. So,
Punky, listen to me.
I shouldn't spar. Huh? I'm scared.
I was, I'll say it on air. I got hands. I can go. I can fight. I'm really good with the mitts. Really good. I'm a beast with the mitts. They put me in there with an amateur boxer. Let me tell you something about the mitts, Punky. The mitts. The mitts don't hit back. Okay? I talked about this in one of my specials. This motherfucker hit me in the face. I ain't been hit in the face in years. Everything went black. Do you hear me? The entire room went black. And I remember closing my eyes after I got hit and I turned my back. I turned my fucking back. And the trainer's like, Kev, turn around, cover up. And this motherfucker started letting them go. Hit me in the body, in the back of the head. When you get hit in the back of the head, it's the most humiliating shit in the world. Because it's like a motherfucker saying, hey, man, turn your stupid ass around. He punched me in the back of the head, and it took a second for me to see again. And when I finally did, you know, I was like, yo, fuck this. You fuck this shit.
Nah,
I got to sit down. I came back out, and, you know, I was able to throw some punches with him after. But that first punch in the face,
that first punch in the face
is a bitch. It's a bitch.
Kev,
those mitts don't hit back. Just remember I told you that.
Look, Kev.
The mitts don't hit back. Okay? You get in there and you catch that solid goddamn glove to the nose, shit gonna get blurry. It's gonna get blurry fast.
So look, all I'm trying to do, I'm trying not to get hit ever. My footwork gotta be golden.
I got to shift gears, right? Because, you know, although we can't, you know, really get into the depth of the business that you partake in, because I want to be respectful to the strike. I want to be respectful to you, to the union, et cetera. But we can talk about, you know, the space of unscripted, the space of radio, right? Where we're talking and we're able to kind of pivot and call audibles. You got a radio show. Right, that's happening on Sirius XM right now, which I'm proud to announce and simply just say, because it's something that we're doing and working on together. Yeah. It wouldn't be in our best interest if we didn't talk about you and your show. And I got to give you a chance to kind of just tell the world about it, what you're doing, and then I'll tag it for you at the end and give you my take on it. You know, the show is Love Thing, and I want you just to give the world just a breakdown as to what Love Thing is, what it's about, and why they should make sure that they pay attention to it on Sirius XM.
Yo, listen, y'all gotta tune in to Love Thing. Number one, it's a show about love, relationships, situationships, entanglements, whatever it is. We'll talk about celebrity relationships, whatever's going on at the moment. Listen to it because we try to break it down in funny ways. You know, I watch a lot of love podcasts, and it's, you know, very serious as it should be. But we want to be serious and vulnerable while also being goofy and stupid. And also, I do give advice. It's very unprofessional, unsolicited advice, which I feel like I can do it because I go off of experience, which I do have 20 years of experience in being in this game, because I got married, and I might not could tell you what to do, but I could tell you what not to do. I had one of the most toxic marriages of all time. And I do explain it sometimes in the Love Thing podcast. So I promise you, I can guide you down the right road. So listen to Love Thing podcast and get this unsolicited, unprofessional advice. And we have fun too.
I mean, when you break it down like that, you're not only giving people a POV into the real, because that's what you're talking about right now. You're talking about real life. You're talking about real life experiences, and you're talking about different approaches to different situations that people are going to honestly relate and resonate with. And I don't think there's nothing better than a person that's not afraid to talk about hurt, turmoil, or the bad. Because to talk about that, you got to be in a place of good. You're not talking about it to stay in a place of bad. You're talking about it to let people know through the bad, you eventually will get to the good. And I mean, even from us talking now on this podcast, there's such a bright light about you, right? As you say, I was hurt. I was fucked up back then. Oh, yeah. I was doing crazy shit. Oh, I got divorced. No, there's more to me than just the gay woman that I am now. There's a lot more. There's death. But you're talking about it with such a rejoiceful tone. And to me, that's a sign of happiness. That's a sign of overcoming whatever the past had. And that's also a sign of being more than prepared for what the future is going to present. And Punky, like, it's clear in the conversation. It's clear in your smile. I wish people could see your smile. And it's clear in just your love for your craft and what you're doing and also what you want to do. So I say that to say, people, make sure you listen to it. Love Thing will be on Sirius XM channel 96. You know, I pride myself on attaching myself to talent that I consider to be the future. Punky is just that, right? And you'll see what I see and more when you give it a listen. And also, look, she's on an amazing path to do more things. She's talking about a comedy special. You heard it. It's special to her. Be on the lookout for it. And also, she's doing a lot more in the industry. I won't dig into it. Like I said, I want to be respectful to the strike. But in this case, I want to make sure that I highlight the talent that you are, the trajectory that you will have, and the success that is coming. Yeah. I don't want to say it's yet to come because you already experienced it, but there's so much more to come. Ladies and gentlemen, guess what? This is Gold Mines. And you already know what we do here. We get inside the minds of amazing personnel. Why? Well, because that's where the gold is. Today was no different, man. Punky Johnson.
Yo.
A future action fucking star.
That's right.
That's
put
right.
some respect on it.
Put some fucking respect on it. All right? You heard her. And I believe her, goddammit.
Yeah.
Punky, thank you for the time. This was long overdue. But I hope you feel like I do and feel like it was worth the wait. Because the damn shit was to me.
100%, Kev. Listen, man. I'm like, people call me, nah, I'm so sorry. I'm like, man, this is a superstar. We talk about, we're not talking somebody that's at a desk every day just with their leg. I'm like, we're talking about a mega, a superstar. I'm like, this, we're good. Just yeah, let me good. Know next we're time.
I promise you, it was worth the wait. This is an amazing episode. I'm just, like I said, I'm moved by your personality. Your energy is special. So please don't change. Keep that energy.
I appreciate right? it, Kev. I appreciate you, man. Thank you for having me out. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. All right, guys. Love thing. Don't forget SiriusXM Channel 96. Yeah. If you don't know, well, you have no excuse because you do now.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Goldmines with Kevin Hart is a SiriusXM and Laugh Out Loud radio production, executively produced by Kevin Hart, Ty Randolph, Mike Stein, Brian Smiley, Eric Eddings, and Eric Weil. Additional production from Elise Ellis and engineered by Marcus Hamm.
Want to make Mom's Day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat Mom to the good stuff from just $30.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.